This is Sales Ops Demystified, the number one most downloaded podcast in sales operations. We invite the brightest minds in sales operations onto the show to deconstruct the why, what, and how behind rep productivity, forecasting, metrics, and all things revenue. This podcast is brought to you by Ebster, the leading customer engagement platform for Salesforce. Hello and welcome to another very special episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. Today, I'm very excited to bring you what I believe to be the very first Scotsman onto the show. David, welcome.
Hey, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much for the invite.
So, interestingly, David was actually the first non-director employee at a company I assume people would have heard of, Free Agent, the accounting software. So he was actually there for a decade and I assume set up and ran the full sales ops function. More recently, is currently at CloudReach leading sales ops there. So David, let's jump right in and go back to the start of the Free Agent days, because I know you didn't join in sales ops. So what did you join as, and how did you graduate? How and why did you graduate into sales ops?
Yeah. A journey and a half is what the time at Free Agent was, and one which really did teach me everything that's allowed me to go forward and use that experience and expertise, both whilst I was at Free Agent, but elsewhere, and now with CloudReach. The starting point of that journey, I was stomping pavements and picking up phones and doing all kind of sales contract sales, really, before I was able to get the contract with Free Agent as a warm body in a suit to pick up a phone and sell the software. You know, it was three technical guys who founded the company. Whipsmart, there's just no two ways about it. And they just needed someone to be able to come in and help them do everything that was around the non-technical side of selling. They picked me up through a contract agency. I was with them for about with Free Agent on contract for about 18 months before going full-time. They were bootstrapping at that point, and it was a whirlwind, right? You did me a little bit of credit there, saying setting up the sales ops function at Free Agent, you know, very much a team effort, obviously. And as the company grew, then they brought in senior experience, people with sales directorship experience and marketing directorship experience, as well as the company grew out and fleshed up the departments that we had. A lot of the growth in the tooling that we were using was organic, but very much decided on the best fit at the time. And we learned a huge amount about, integrating processes and tooling so that we actually had, a best fit product. I mean, I think some of the best experience for me from the time at Free Agent is the scars that I wear on some of the things that we learned not to do, you know? And it really does give you the benefit of 2020, really, to see the way things were purely from situations with sales teams looking at, motivations from remuneration or the processes we had in place when we were going after particular target markets without maybe identifying verticals fast enough. You know, all of these things that now as sales ops as a thing is much more defined. At that time, it was less so. We were using EchoSign right off the bat, before it became Adobe eSign or Adobe Sign. And they themselves were only started in 2006, Free Agent 2007. I joined them the very start of 2008, roughly. And so we were really getting to grips with not just selling SaaS, but in many respects, selling software itself online. Like selling security felt like was the main thing that was being done to begin with, because you're convincing people about the benefit of being online and doing accountancy online. Whereas now you think about any tooling that you use, your go-to is that, well, of course you would choose an online tool, right? I mean, why would you ever think to go for a wet ink signature over, you know, the seconds it takes to get something to and from across the world and returned back to you? So the tooling we had, as I say, really organic and a team effort to get it in. Salesforce, when we brought it in, was revolutionary in many of the ways that we were going about things. More recently, when you think about the transition from Classic to Lightning, you know, that's a big change, it's a big shift, even though to begin with it feels like it's just the UI UX change. Actually, it's the underlying ability to automate on top of it that just completely changes the way that you can build and the way that you can automate. Going a wee bit out of chronological order. My time at FreeAgent was very much sales-based.
I just actually have one question on that. This is super interesting. You joined as the first non-tech person. So your decade with the business could have gone in many different directions. Why do you think it went into the sales ops lane?
I always used to talk about flexibility and resilience. And I still do. You know, pragmatism is hugely important. And in many respects, being able to shake hands with whatever CEO is equally as important as I did. Walking around the office, taking lunch orders for people so that they could spend time doing work and not wasting time going out, you know, not coding. So if we, it got to the stage where, you know, I'd come back like one of the rescue dogs with lunch for everyone from, you know, Legal Jack's beautiful place in Edinburgh, which is amazing. And we're like, look, this is just nuts. So we started Friday lunches instead. We just ordered in. And many companies, you know, they bring in these accidental cultures where, you know, the family that eats together stays together. You know, literally there was a blog post that was written about that for FreeAgent. That whole culture grew up really because it was something that we did. We didn't introduce it, you know, there weren't like beanbags thrown around the place and you wouldn't, you know, say, oh, I'm going to work here because I get to wear casual clothes, or, you know, I get to not have to wear shoes or whatever. You know, we didn't design that. It was just the way that the team worked together. And so my take on that company was, one, I was delighted to be working there because it was super cool to be able to start something, or to start with something that was really, really early on. I remember Ed saying to me, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, you know, around about the point when we didn't know every customer by name was when we thought we were going to have to, you know, make something of this and, you know, or you know, sell the idea and pitch on. So they made something of it, and, you know, I and the many hundreds of other people who have gone through the doors of FreeAgent, many of whom are still there, the turnover at that company is very, very low because they're just a fabulous company. I'm doing a good pitch for them, aren't I?
You are, and which is why we need to switch up the track and talk about cloud reach. So today, roughly how many reps are we looking at and how many people in your team?
Big shift, big, big shift. So FreeAgent was 6 account managers, 6 BDMs, maybe 6 SDRs, right? And the operations was everything. I mean, it included enablement as much as it was sales ops. I mean, it was the whole kit and caboodle. You could really call it commercial operations because it had that umbrella of everything. You know, training salespeople, taking them through the systems that they had, making sure the systems were best fit, sort of purpose, and the processes that we had, and documenting them, and then everything, really everything. But it was UK focused, and it was deliberately so because it was a UK accounts tool. Moving into CloudReach, being able to take that whole experience meant I was moving not just from industry to industry with accountancy through to lift and shift bare metal and you know, migrating companies to cloud and then allowing those companies to benefit from, you know, the speed to data, which is huge beneficial gains, you know, pitch to CloudReach. But for me, it was a move from around about, you know, 18 people and then the overlays and the small number of people in management, you know, the sales managers there, to with CloudReach supporting a team, your quota carrying team, because there's loads of different types of role within it, from your technical sellers to your actual sales reps, the people who are working with the CSPs, AWS and Microsoft and so on, and all of the leaders within that cohort is about 70 people. And they're split across 5 or 6 regions globally. It's really, really interesting to support these sales leaders. So I myself jumped up from supporting a team of one effectively to supporting a team of 3, because I'm an EMEA European sales ops. I've got a counterpart in the States who supports the team there. But we are cross-collaborative. We chase the sun. So everything that I do, they need to be able to do, and vice versa. So we do support our teams directly. I support the European team. But when it comes to something like process rollout or indeed commission, it's the entire team. And that's around about 70 people. Massive shift. And, you know, the sales process that they follow, the methodology is very different. But it means I get to turn my hand from a particular methodology, which was very customer-centric, really cool methodology from to classic medic sales methodology. So really transitioning, but being able to apply the skill sets that are needed to be able to help reps to go through those things, not just in process execution by, you know, verbally helping with the enablement. I mean, we have a dedicated enablement lady, Virginia, who is just phenomenal. But also with the systems to be able to help support that as well. And, you know, with our Salesforce admins being able to put through the project management pieces of work with the project managers, and being able to provide that insight to ensure that these processes, they work, that they are usable, that they're tenable, and that they help, most importantly, the sales reps to do their job, which, you know, benefits the sales reps, benefits the company, and just makes everything work as an oiled machine.
Awesome. I think briefly the sales tech stack you guys are running at the moment.
Super robust is the first thing, and that is not down to any one person. It really is down to the team. And I mean, when I walked in to CloudReach, there were a couple of things which I said immediately, right, we should replace X with Y. And we are doing that. We're in the process of doing that in many areas. And it wasn't just me that said this. You know, these were mirrored thoughts across the board from the people who are in our very small sales ops team. I mean, it's very much, it's not wag the dog, right? But your sales ops function is very, very much the small end of the spectrum. And so you're bringing expertise into to that particular tech stack. But to the specifics of the tech stack, you know, we're kicking off the prospect and the intelligence stuff with Discover.org, ZoomInfo, which, yeah, I mean, it's not particularly surprising what we're using. You know, you'll have heard this across the board. But from there, you've got, I mean, supporting that as well is what the reps are doing day to day with LinkedIn, Sales Navigator, and so on, if they're using that particular tool, which, you know, they have the ability to do so. The engagement and the enablement side of things are through Pardo and Salesloft. Pardo's great. I mean, it's very much a, you know, cadence, day one, day two, day five, day six, how you're interacting with people and so on. The content that the company's writing is fantastic, coming from the experts who are, you know, delivering that kind of insight that's for the audience they're interested in approaching. Very much the evergreen content as well. That was a huge free agent strategy, and it's nice to see that companies industry to industry are replicating that. CRM for us at Salesforce, no great surprises there. Analytics, we are getting more and more involved in Einstein, used and loved Einstein free agent. Also, we used Looker previously, so I'm comfortable with that. Not professing to be a SQL expert by any measure, but, you know, I can turn my hand if need be. Interestingly as well, we don't use it, but I do love it as a sort of a tool I particularly love, is just Gecko boards. You know, when we're talking, one of the huge things that I like to talk about, and I think many other people do as well, is common language and being able to facilitate that. You know, Gecko boards allow you to do that. There's only so much that you can do with a Salesforce dashboard, literally because of licensing. Right, you know, you can create the best information, the best insight, but if you don't have the ability to give that information to people when it's, you know, it's rationalized information. You don't, you know, promote the underwear drawer and show everything to everyone. But, you know, Gecko boards allow you to really distribute that information, and that common language is supported. And then, of course, you know, as we are using Einstein, there's another really important thing, which is, can you, talk about pragmatism, can you do something quick and dirty, right? Can you use Apex XL connector and haul some reports out of Salesforce to be able to pivot? Because, God, I'd love a pivot. You know, there's just something really nice being able to get immediate access to information, to prototype, to see what you want to build, and then to say, hey, does something like this work? You know, could we formalize this? Could we build this? And that leads to the tail end of things with the compensation commission. I mean, we, you know, one of the first recommendations for me was to look at exactly. I think it was literally the first thing I said, right, you need to look at formalizing the way that this is done, because I mean, it's phenomenal the way that we do commission at CloudReach. It's again pretty hand cranked, and so automating really the system. And I say hand cranked as in, you know, I have my fingerprints all over it, because I'm running the calculations with the sales ops team, and so it's peer reviewed and really robust in that sense. But moving it to a more automated place where people have the ability to see if this is happening, then that's the impact on my potential payout. Mm. You know, it's something that you just can't replicate if you're giving someone an export range sheet of, here's your activity, this is, you know, A multiplied by B equals C, that's your payout. Being able to say to people, here are the insights and here is the way that your compensation could look as a motivational tool. It's just, you know, that's a great place to be in. And obviously also, bye-bye shadow reporting. You know, all those little insidious time thieves just go away. But yeah, that's our tech stack. I mean, there are a bunch of other tools that we use as well. You know, I have a real soft spot for Trello, obviously with DocuSign, previously EchoSign, but much of a much less there. Spotify, I would count that in my tech stack quite heavily.
Okay. Before we get into all of them, first of all, I love the concept of shadow forecasting, and I've never heard that before, and I'm going to take that away and maybe ask other interviewers.
Not a good
about
thing. Shadow reporting.
Not a good thing at all.
Not a good thing. Not a good thing.
So digging into the last 3 months and the state of the virus, I'd like to know how at CloudReach you guys have kind of changed the way you're working, but then also changed the way you've been forecasting.
Okay. So the first part of that, how we've changed the way that we're working, the company obviously has had to respond to the virus much like every other company, insofar as the remote working is remote first. And that is not unusual for the company in itself, a company which promotes and advocates being online. It's not a difficult position for us to also to dog food it in that sense. And for me personally, in that respect as well, much as for the rest of the sales operations team, a small unit as we are global, and I support a team that is international. Again, I'm just outside of Edinburgh, and the people who I work with on a daily basis, they're in Munich, Berlin, they're in Atlanta, they're in, over in the Netherlands or down in London. It's rare that I talk to people in anything other than this space. And that's fine. You know, I mean, it brings with it its own challenges. And one of those is making sure that people take care of themselves, because it's so easy to just keep doing and keep going and keep going. And when you're doing things which are really exciting and you're quite passionate about them as well, you can often find yourself just caught up in the trap of you know, chasing the sun yourself, which obviously you shouldn't do. You get a team to be able to do that. A cautionary tale there, if nothing else. But, you know, the company is really great at supporting people to be able to successfully remote work. And that means looking after yourself as much as your colleagues. So we have adopted the remote working policy without any difficulty whatsoever. And again, I think it'd be incredibly sad if we specifically weren't able to, again, given what we do as a company. How has reporting changed? Reporting shouldn't really change. I mean, the metrics that we are running, that we are looking at, KPIs that we're monitoring, this should be consistent. You know, the problem is inconsistency in metrics and inconsistency in that common language. And people not knowing what is expected of them is, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. It's on us to make sure that we've got the KPIs correct. And that comes down to things like, you know, the quota achievement, the win rate, the deal size, all those things. You can wrap them up in the pretty bow of sales velocity where you've got a number. But actually, even just looking at the performance metrics and the, you know, the efficiency metrics for the reps, you know, these things should be consistent. You know, one of the tangential parts that you were asking about how are we changing reporting, but also with forecasting, those things are all linked in together. We have the reps deliver their forecast or pledge every week. And the way for them to be able to do that accurately is for them to have confidence in what it is that's being asked of them. And whilst we haven't made striking changes in the nature of what we're doing when we're coming to report for the sales team and from the sales operations team and the information that the sales ops team gives to the company as a whole and works with other teams to be able to provide that upward and outward insight and then the very specific sales insight to the sales team as well, what we have is a constant refinement of the way that we are supporting the sales reps. You know, it has to be customer-centric. Our customers are the team. You know, we're one layer further away from actual customers. So my customers, the sales reps, and my colleagues. And it's really important to think about them in that way to remain customer-centric, in my opinion. But the things that we have to do if we're... For example, we were trying to be creative, not creative, we're trying to be clever with the way that we were helping reps give their pledge, you know, the closest to the pin number that they're going to give for the quarter. We did that by supporting them with some maths that meant they only had to put in an adjustment and then the value would come up. But that, you know, it tricked people up more than it helped them. So we ripped that out to say, look, it's just the number that you are going to land on, really recent. You know, another way of looking at the way that we support people to ensure that they have the best ability to give the best data, the best insight, are those supporting frameworks like Medic. See, you know, huge effort in the entire company, and this is global. The entire sales team went and did that. You know, there was a whole training scheme to bring people up to a, you know, a level setting. And it means, again, you know, I've said it a couple of times now, but that common language is there. And that is just so important. It can't be understated, the importance of it. But for us to support it, again, one of the things that we did was we, when we were looking at our pipeline and our forecast, we had four stages. So, you know, you don't need four stages, you need three. You know, you've got commit, upside, pipeline. If you have a fourth, you just introduce ambiguity into what it is you're saying. Well, where is this? What shade of gray is this that we're looking at for when is it going to close? You know, just be confident in the simplicity of what you're doing. And the consistency of what you're doing is hugely important, because then you have the ability to track trends of what has changed inside of these past months, you know, with sales cycles and age and stage, and what is it that we are seeing are the impacts on how quickly things are closing, what is the appetite for consumption. And if we decided to change our metrics drastically, you know, we maybe respond in a sales way of providing different things, but if we change the metrics, we don't have any way to benchmark against what has gone between what is now and what has been the past 4 to 6 months. So, you know, those age and stage and velocity metrics are going to be really interesting to see once all of this is kind of returned back to a version of what it was before we hit this, you know, complete paralysis. But in itself, again, you know, for a world which has gone remote, as it is as a company, which makes companies go remote, you know, business hasn't changed in so much as, it has changed, obviously. But the thing that CloudReach does is the thing that it's still able to do, professionally speaking. And so we've been in a really fortunate position to really help companies to take advantage of the insights and leverage the benefits of being online. And that, I mean, that's a nice thing to be able to wake up and see every day, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, if you don't have consistency in the metrics, there's no way that they can even be useful. And so I actually really like that answer. Now, for the two most important questions, who has been your biggest sales ops-related inspiration in your whole career?
It's a tough one, isn't it? I think it would be unfair to say that there's any single person. Right? It would be really hugely unfair because learning by osmosis as you go through your working career is a natural thing, right? We pick up from everyone. We take the things that we like the most from the way that other people, other companies, other entities have done things. But I mentioned Jacko before and the Winning by Design team, and I think. You know, I can type in what is sales operations, and any number of companies will have articles about what it is, you know, the difference between it and enablement. And I'm delighted that those things exist. They didn't exist. I wish they had done when I started, when I was doing the administrative management of the sales side of things at Free Agent, but they didn't exist. And so a lot of what I learned was through my own opportunities to do things better, because it's only a mistake if you do it twice, right? But as I have been able to go through the time that I've been doing this, you know, I've picked up from really inspirational leaders more than technical people. And one of those people is absolutely without a shadow of a doubt Ed Molyneux from Free Agent. You've got people who are process driven again, like Jacko and his entire team. One of the people who I really admire would be, and the reason for this is because of his way of talking about the difference between, the misconception sometimes between authority and leadership. And it's really important for someone in a sales ops position to not have to be an authority figure by quote unquote rank, but a leader. And that can be a leader through, you know, genuine, integrity through data and being data driven. And the person who talks about that and gives the TED Talks about business in its whole entirety, Simon Sinek, you know, is a particularly well-known guy. I mean, I'm not alone in crowing about the things that he talks around and about. And, you know, I tell people about his, why good leaders make people feel safe video all the time. You know, it's a 12-minute video and it's a mentality thing. It really is a mentality thing. So I'd be remiss. There are huge numbers of people who have helped me. I mean, one of the people was someone who I worked with at Free Agent who I trained up, and then, you know, they were just going, hey, we could do this better. We should do this. We should do that. That's Carly. You know, she's great. She actually runs the sales ops at Free Agent. Having taken it on when I moved away. So, I would say definitely those are the kind of the pieces of that puzzle, but there's no one person. I wish I could say there was one person because it would have made my life a lot easier when I started out, right?
For sure. And we'll close there. The sense I get from you, David, is like an immense passion for this thing that it seems like you kind of stumbled across in Free Agent all those years ago. Because you can speak with such strength and authority on it at length. And so it's been really, really interesting, like delving into the mind of someone who has been immersed in this for over a decade now. And I picked out a couple of gems, particularly on like keeping metrics constant, shadow forecasting, which I just absolutely love that phrase. So it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on.
Likewise, and apologies, brevity is maybe not always my strong suit. Yes, I can talk at length, but no, thank you very much for having me. And being at the coalface of what this is for quite some time now has given me the ability to reflect on things in a way that I hope really benefits not just the leaders and the companies, but also the people who are direct and the people who are driving companies forward, the sales teams. You know, being a pastoral care provider for them through data-driven methodologies is hugely important. And at the end of the day, if we can automate ourselves out of the way, move on to cool problems and challenges so that salespeople have the ability to do more and faster, then we're all winning.
For sure. David, thank you for joining.
Thanks, Sam. Speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sales Ops Demystified podcast. If you are listening on a podcast listening application, then please subscribe, rate, and review. And if you have any questions about the show, if you know a guest, or if you have any questions about sales operations, just hit me up at tomhunt@ebster.com. That's tomhunt@ebster.com.